capacity, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. And very happy to be here this evening on this exciting Friday night. We've got so much going on in the world, as many people will know. And so I just want to make a few announcements before we get started here with my illustrious guests. And I'll go into all of that in a minute. First of all, I want to let everyone know that I did release the Norman Berggren Ringmakers of Saturn Total Interview today, and it is on the front page of Project Camelot. Just scroll down partway, and you'll see what says latest release about in the middle of the page. And then if you scroll below that, you'll see a picture of me and my crew, Tommy and Jerry and Norm Berggren on the blog, and a sort of a short explanation just about the interview itself. I also want to draw people's attention to an interesting post on George Ure's website. He's got a lot going on there. George Ure is urbansurvival.com, and just want to give him a bit of a plug here because he's got a lot of good information on there about various things that may be going on this weekend. A lot of sort of, I guess you might say, I don't know, a collusion of events, maybe a collision of events going on behind the scenes here. I know that Obamacare has passed this ridiculous mandatory health care type of thing, and that is really an abomination in my view, for various reasons that I won't go into right the second, otherwise this will get too long. But I do want to say that George Ure's urbansurvival.com, he's got some important information on there about this weekend and about possible war games, for real games, actually, you know, the real thing that might be going on behind the scenes with regard to Syria, saying that there are 8 U.S. aircraft carriers that have hurriedly left port and are now standing off U.S. shores. Not sure what that's all about, but there is some thought that there could be something going on with an attack either on Iran or on, I don't know, Syria. Then there's the movement of Obama into the Colorado Springs area, supposedly to look at fire damage. But everyone knows that's where NORAD is, Cheyenne Mountain, et cetera. And if you want to get your president to be in a safe place for some kind of happenings over the weekend, that would be a place to go. So these things bear watching. I don't know that they necessarily mean who's coughing on the line? Who's got, it's like, I've got someone on the line there because I can hear him coughing. So I know, can you want to say who you are? Is this one of my guests?
Sorry, it was me. I forgot I didn't mute. Michael's with us, by the way.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah. If you'd mute yourself, Mama, that'd be really awesome. Okay. Michael Tellinger is my 15-minute guest here at the beginning of the show, and then we will move right on to George Kavassalis in Australia, who is going to be standing by eagerly awaiting his 15 minutes of fame, just kidding, here on Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio. Michael Tellinger is in town here in LA, and I just wanted to give him a bit of a boost because he will be doing a sort of a workshop event here in Los Angeles, and I just wanted to give him a chance to sort of announce his tour here in the U.S. and also talk a little bit about his workshop tomorrow. So, Michael, are you there?
I'm here, Gary. How are you?
I'm great. And lovely to hear your voice. Exciting to have you here in town.
Excellent. So nice to hear your voice, too. I haven't heard it for a while. But I've just screamed up to Panga Canyon to get to my computer.
I know. I was just thinking. I was just cringing. I wanted to tell you, please don't get in a car accident just to make the show. You know, this is just craziness.
And you, There are so many concealed driveways and places up here at the Panka Canyon. We actually missed the turnoff and we had to do a U-turn to come back.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, I'm glad you made it safely. It's not something I was trying to encourage, you know, reckless driving, et cetera. But here you are. So can you tell people what you're doing tomorrow here in L.A.? And then if you want to sort of talk about your future plans here, going north, I guess, and then maybe into Canada or whatever.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Gary. Yeah, we're just concluding the USA tour for 2012. We've come all the way from New York and Vermont, where I started out in New York City, and the annual conference of the Dowsers Society of South Africa. And went right across the USA doing 14 stops. And we find ourselves in Los Angeles tomorrow at a wonderful ranch here in Topanga Canyon, the Cross Bull Ranch, hosted by wonderful Lisa Tsiansi. And it's just spectacular being back here. I just love it up here. I know the last time I was here, I was having dinner with you and David Wilcox, so it's wonderful being back here. And so people that are interested in coming, there isn't much space. I think we probably only have about 10, maybe 15 places left for people for tomorrow. We'll start at 1 o'clock, and it'll go through until about 6 o'clock, a nice interactive workshop and a presentation that deals with the vanished civilizations of humankind in South Africa. The origins of humankind, one of your favorite subjects, on the trail of the Anunnaki, the physical evidence of the gold mines and the vanished gold mining empire of the Anunnaki in southern Africa. And then it gets into more esoteric areas, I guess, of 2012 and rise of consciousness and where we go to from here. And I'll be spending quite a bit of time on my favorite subject, where my life is heading to very quickly, and that is a world without money, contributionism, Ubuntu contributionism, and the post-2012 new age, new world scenario that we're all painting, I guess, for ourselves. An abundance for all on this planet.
Well, I certainly hope so. Although, considering some of the things that have been going on just lately, it's not looking real positive at the moment. Although I always keep a sort of open mind and try to stay positive about the future, which for some reason I have no problem doing. I don't know why. That's just something in my DNA. I don't know. I just have a very positive view of humanity. But yes, things are wild and crazy out there right now. Well, Michael, you know, it's lovely to have you on, and I hope that we can, you know, just put the word out, and maybe some 10 people will come along, and you'll have a full workshop there, but I'm sure you have plenty of people regardless. Michael is a wonderful speaker. I've actually done some joint speaking events with him, both in South Africa and in Sedona, and here in LA as well. So in the past, and so I know from experience that he is well worth listening to, and he will take you on quite a journey. And for those of you who aren't aware, I have a documentary that's a free documentary about Adam's calendar here on the Project Camelot website. It's at the top. If you just scroll through the various videos that are available there, you'll find the one on Adam's calendar. And it really takes you on the journey to Adam's calendar, which was one of the most important, I don't know if you'd call it a sacred site, but certainly a high potential portal area on the planet, and it lines right up with the Pyramid of Giza and et cetera, et cetera. So it's been much overlooked. And Michael, let me ask you, is it still, have they been trying to ban groups from going up there again?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's officially still closed. as you know, we went there in November last year, and I believe that Alfred Weber has just released a 1.5-hour documentary called Occupy Adam's Calendar, which is quite wonderful. When I saw that, I was really amused. And you were with us there, weren't you, Kerry?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I'm one of the stars of the documentary. No, just kidding.
Yeah, and Lloyd Pye and Alfred Weber and myself and you and and Laura Eisenhower. It was just a great, and William Brown, especially William Brown, because he speaks about the genetics and the manipulation and the genetic cloning aspect of it, which is phenomenal. So yeah, yes. Very exciting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's, yes, I did hear about that. I haven't had a chance to actually watch it, but, it was a fun time, and we were there, more or less clandestinely and illegally, and, basically doing, we were practicing what we preach there, by occupying Adam's calendar, in the very early morning hours. It was, It was foggy and very misty and sort of mystical and magical, as always it is in Adam's calendar, very, very magical place. And so, highly recommended. I don't know. Are you leading groups there anyway? What are you doing?
Yeah, I've led, since you were there with the crowd in November, 2011, I've had probably three or four additional tours. I'm keeping it to a minimum, but yeah, it's interesting. The tour groups are growing. The last group I had was a international group of psychics and dowsers that came out of Holland, of all places. And it was a remarkable tour, a full-day tour of the ruins, the stone ruins of around Waardvolbuurfen, where I live, as you know, and then down to Adam's calendar. And what is amazing is that some of those ladies from Holland were dowsers, and they were dowsing as I was talking all along, all day long, confirming with their dowsing pretty much 95% of what I was saying. And that was an amazing experience.
Wow, that's awesome. That's cool.
And the best part about Kerry was that many of those ladies, especially the one lady that had a dowsing instrument that I really was crazy about, I just loved it. And the energy that it exhumed, or that it brought forth, was I could almost feel it. And she didn't speak very good English, and yet although she didn't understand often what I was saying or what I was asking to confirm, I could see whether I was lying or not based on what the tool in her hand was doing.
that's got to be the perfect sort of verification for a male-female interactions, is to have a dowsing rod when talking to a male of the species. And
it was just great. Yeah. Am I lying to you, honey? Yeah. Do you love me, honey? Yeah, of course I love you.
So you can just take that off in many directions. But I can see how that would flatter the male ego if it kept saying yes, yes, yes. Just what you always want to hear. So, no, just kidding. Anyway, it's great to hear from you, Michael. And it sounds wonderful. I'm so happy you're still taking groups there. I think that people would love to visit that area, just let me ask you just briefly, and then I do have to let you go, and because we've got George standing by, but what is the sort of tenor of the times in South Africa, in Joburg, for the moment? Are things heating up there? Is it mellowing out? What's going on there?
Well, you know, the calendar was closed. You know what the reason was, because Johan Heine went there and cleared the site, you know, around the stones, because he wanted to photograph it, and he caused a little bit of damage, potential, you know, erosion risk and so forth, but nothing really to get too excited about. And they just overreacted and closed the site to everybody and accused all of us of desecrating the place. Or they don't even recognize it as an ancient site, just a bunch of rocks to the government, you know. So
yeah.
The Department of Water and Forestry closed it to, as you know, to the public, and we haven't been able to go there, but I've still been taking people there, and they don't really have the jurisdiction to close it. That has to come from higher up. But
in terms of Joburg and South Africa, I'm just talking politically now, because I think a lot of people are always concerned about, how it is in going in and coming out of South Africa. Would you say that the world situation is very precarious? Are you finding that it's affecting South Africa in any way?
I've got a feeling that South Africa is slowly but surely becoming a haven for people to come and live in. And I must tell you, I've had probably between half a dozen and a dozen Americans email me over the last 12 months asking me, you know, how is South Africa? What are the immigration laws? How much do the houses cost? can we come and move? And quite a few Americans want to leave the USA and come and live in South Africa as an option.
Yes.
I must tell you that it's becoming scary. And having driven through the United States, as you know, this is my third annual trip. I have seen how things have tightened up here, how strict it's become, how much of a police state the USA has become. It's scary.
Yeah. There's, you'll find, I must warn you at night, we'll be meeting for dinner, very soon. And I just want to warn you, obey all the traffic laws at night and be careful if you don't drink and drive, because they have checkpoints now in the Malibu area that just crop up in the middle of the night. In Malibu of all places, which is like the most absurd place to have a checkpoint. But at any rate, that's what they do.
I saw one today. We actually saw one today.
Oh, for God's sake. A daytime one. Okay. That's a new one for me. That usually it's at night.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. I'm going to have to let you go, but thank you so much for coming on, Michael. I've put a link to your site on the front page of Camelot, under the radio show area. And, so that people can find the registration information and whatnot. And we have an ad up there as well.
I think, Kerry, because it's so late, can I just give a telephone number out for people to call?
Go right ahead.
Want to, because it's really late. We might not pick it up on email. So just phone 310-455-1252. That's 310-455-1252. And speak to Lisa if you want to come. And we hope to see you up here tomorrow starting at 1 o'clock to Panga Canyon.
Okay, very cool. And I will stop by if I get a chance tomorrow during the day. But regardless, I'm going to see you on Sunday. So take care. And all my best to Louise as well.
Thanks very much, Kerry. All my love to you and your team there.
Oh, thanks so much. Okay, good night.
Bye.
Now we should have George Kavassilis. I don't know if he's been standing by on the line or whether we're going to have to get him on the line. George, do you happen to be there?
Hello.
George?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Well, very nice to hear your voice. This is Kerry from Project Camelot, and you're on my radio show, and I'm very happy to have you here. Thank you for standing by and being patient. We wanted to give a short update from Michael Tellinger, who's here in Los Angeles for just a couple of days.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's great to be on. I really, really appreciate the invite to be back on your show. So thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's been maybe a year since we've last talked. I'm not sure. The time is kind of flying.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been a while. And time is speeding up, that's for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. So what I know you have a new book out, and you probably do want to talk about your book, but I'm sure that we've got a lot of new listeners here on this radio show. This is Revolution Radio, and I think there may be some people, I know you've got a big following, who know who you are, but if you could give yourself kind of a short intro bio for those who have not seen the Project Camelot interview with you and are not familiar with who you are, that would help, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, my name is George, and I was born in Sydney, Australia. I went to school in Sydney, and I was christened a Greek Orthodox. I went to a Catholic boys high school, so I've been having to deal with Christendom for some time, and I've had a very ordinary life, you know, going to school, going to swimming carnivals, playing lots of sport. I did lots of sports. I probably excelled at swimming and squash and things like that. And I had that side of my life, and then I had this other side of my life where I was having all these extraordinary experiences from as far back as I can remember, even from a very young age. And that was really difficult to deal with and very challenging, because I'd be, and when I talk about other experiences, I'm talking about being taken into craft at night and interacting with beings from other realms, other dimensions, other worlds, even being taken to other worlds, and having quite a mix of interactions with what we would term benevolent beings, beings that we're familiar with that felt like family, and then beings that had, I would say, a more malevolent approach, more of a an agenda to study, to probe and prod and implant and manipulate and control. So I've had quite a variety of experiences. But I guess the biggest one for me was in 2003, where my galactic family picked me up and we went closer towards the Sirius system. And there, with our unified love field, they were able to maintain the integrity of my body. There wasn't any technology used. It was just pure love that maintained the integrity of my body, because I came out of my body. Everything that animates me into existence came out. And I then, with my consciousness, took a journey up through the universe, through the dimensions of the universe, and got to rediscover what life's all about and realize that the scale and the magnitude of this universe, and then the scale and the magnitude of who and what we are as beings. And I got to peer outside this universe, connect very momentarily with my eternal essence, which is beyond this universe, and have a bit of a look-see out there, just a local neighborhood. And really, when I got back, I couldn't stop laughing. I came back into my body, back into the craft. The laughter was incredible. And after this, I would say the rediscovery of who we all are and what we're doing here, I kind of got targeted once I got back. And this was in 2003, and I got back into my bed, and it was kind of like the next day is, okay, what do I do with this now? It was a crazy and very surreal moment for me. But then soon after, what ensued was an incredible drama, because I had an energetic signature that had not only pierced the veil of the earthly matrix, I'd also pierced the veil of the cosmic matrix. And I had a very strong energetic signature, and I was targeted. And so I had to endure quite a lot of abductions and tortures and what have you. And it's been quite a tough ride. But I'd do it all again because of who and what it's made me. So I'm very, very, even though it's a journey that's been very challenging, I'm really quite pleased with having created such a life for myself.
Okay, well, thank you, George, for that. I'm sure that people will be interested to follow more of your story. First of all, why don't you give out your website where people can find your new book and kind of current information on you, because I'm sure they'll be curious about that. I have linked on the front page of Camelot that information, but just here on the radio, just for those who haven't been over there.
Yeah, we've recently changed our website, and it has a new URL. It's now ourjourneyhome.com.au. And we also, I've written a book, and it's only just finished. It's not available on paperback at the moment, but it will be soon. And that website for that is ourjourneyhome.com.au. And we also have a little radio show podcast that we've started too, which is lots of fun. And I have a newfound level of respect for people who do these kinds of things, because there's so much work involved. And it's called superwooradio.com or .com.au. And we called it Super Woo Radio because, you know, we talk all that woo-woo stuff that the general public just think is just a load of codswallop. And me and my friend Jason, we said, you know, we don't just talk normal woo. We're like Kerry, you know, we talk super woo. So that's where the name originated from, because we're not just talking about ghosts and angels and stuff. We're talking some pretty serious woo.
Absolutely. Well, good stuff. Camelot listeners, of course, appreciate the deepest of the deep. And along those lines, I think I sent you a link, but I just released an interview with Norm Bergram, who wrote years and years ago. He was way ahead of the pack, so to speak, what's called Ringmakers of Saturn. And he is 91 years old. and just very, very bright and very, very, very much still with, totally with it, and says there not are not enough hours in the day for him to do the work he needs to do. So so there's a person that can inspire just about anyone to sort of keep at it. But along those lines, well, we have some serious woo, as you call it, to go into here. So, might as well just kind of leap in with both feet. Why don't you give the basic premise of your book? Because it's taken you off in a different direction than when I interviewed you initially. And then we can kind of, I guess, talk about the various points that you're trying to get across.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly cathartic process for me. I never expected to go on such an incredibly deep journey with it. When I first sat down to write the book, I thought I was just going to be just jotting down what I've been speaking of up until that point in time, just to put it in written form for people and make it like an 80-page booklet or something like that. And next thing I know, I'm opening all these internal doorways and accessing memories which were taken away from me from that journey in 2003 and from all the abductions I've had to endure since that time. And it's just been an incredible, incredible process. So I would have to say, when John Callaman said that the cycle ends around October last year, I actually would have to say on one level he was absolutely correct, because the changes I've gone through since that time have been incredible, and not only me, but those around us, around me as well. So I feel that there's been an incredible shift that's happened for a lot of people of late, and the book has really taken us on an incredible journey into really deep insights as to what's going on with the cosmic matrix and its structure, its programs, and helping people to look beyond this cosmic matrix, to look beyond the earthly matrix, because we've had a lot of information about the earthly matrix, a lot. And I do go into that as well in the book. There's, you know, it needs to be covered. I've been talking about this moon matrix for well over 15 years, and I went public with it. I've been talking about it in groups here in Adelaide in South Australia for well over 15 years, because I was experiencing that firsthand, and beings from the moon and having experiences of being taken to the moon and what have you, and understanding the matrix and what was going on with it. And I went public with it in 2009.
I love the applause. there you go, George. They're all applauding you mightily. So please do continue with that kind of encouragement.
Yeah, it's and so when I went public with it in 2009, it started to get people thinking and create a bit of a stir in March 2009. And I felt that it was also time to now release the knowledge I had about the cosmic matrix. And it's because there's a lot of beings that are – the beings that are creating the earthly matrix have quite a large hierarchical structure, and it goes out into the what I call the great arena, which is really, really big. It's vast. It contains many, many universes, but it's all contained within the greater universe. And it's in the book, I describe the model of the universe, the layers, the levels. There's a great what's known as the great void between the fourth and the fifth dimensions, and all these parallel universes where many of these God entities come from, and where spiritual hierarchies of angels, ascended masters, and all that sort of all those sorts of beings and entities come from. They're all contained within the great arena of this universe. And and they all come from many, many multiple paradigms and universes. So, you know, we're talking some serious woo here, and it's really, really helping people to grasp the big picture, because this is what it's about.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it is very interesting, and I have to say that matrixes are by nature deceptive. So when people are reading them, we're also subject to being deceived on a multitude of levels. But any rate, what I'd like to do is kind of get you to talk a little bit about where you come up with some stuff that you haven't put up out there in the past, because I think people, at least I think maybe the main body of the audience will be familiar with some of the things you've talked about in the past. So kind of building on that for this show, if we can go into some of those areas that you haven't dealt with, and see where you're going with all of that. I think it will be useful. I haven't finished your entire book, but I read a fair amount of it, although very quickly, in the last day or two. And so I am familiar with some of the departures from where you're going. And I think that we have some things to discuss, as I sort of gave you the heads up on the email there. But, you know, I do want to say just from the outset that, you know, we are all working to make clear any, insights that we come upon as individuals, with regard to the Matrix and with regard to the real game that's being played here on Earth and the various dimensions and densities beyond this. And so sometimes you may be talking about the same thing and using different language. And sometimes you may be using language that you think is similar and talking about different things. So it's
kind of
a...
Semantics can be frustrating.
Yeah. So but given all of that, you know, we can at least try to go down some of those roads. And then, even on the second hour, if possible, I know that people would like to call in and ask you questions, George. So I do want to give them that opportunity. And I do want to say that there is a chat room that is part of this show. Actually, there are two chat rooms. One is on freedomslips.com, I believe, although I'm not sure where the link is. I think it may be obvious. And the other is on Project Camelot. So if you go to projectcamelot.org on the front page and scroll down to the radio show, you'll see where it says to join the chat, and you just click on that and make up some name or use your real one and then come on to the chat. And if you have questions, I always ask people to put them in all caps. That's the best way to go. And then we also have the option of bringing in callers if we should decide to do so. So some point during the show, we can also do that. So yeah, with all of that out of the way, if you'd like to sort of talk about some of the parts where the book is a departure from what you've covered in the past, and maybe see if we can delineate out a few of those areas.
Yeah, it's I've always had it in me, but what happened was since that trip in 2003, I kind of got really taken in by the Galactic Federation of Light, and a lot of people know that story and what happened there, and there was still residue left over from that, and also I hadn't been talking about these subjects because on one level I wasn't ready to deal with them, so it's a symbiotic thing, and I definitely wasn't ready to deal with this level of knowledge and really share it in a way that can be explained with clarity and understanding. And because I needed to really let go of more of my belief systems so I could, and that's the cathartic process I've been going through as well in writing this book. And it took me into an area where, and first, before I go any further, look, nobody has to accept what I'm about to share. We're all on our own journey, and I totally honor and respect everyone's journey. So I don't want to sound like I'm preaching or anything like that. I'm just sharing my experiential knowledge with my humanity. So I just needed to clarify that up front. Okay. It took me into an area of understanding the level of the cosmic matrix, that we're more immersed into it than what we first thought. And things that we've been, practicing, like doctrines we've been practicing, like certain meditation techniques and what have you, is, I came to realize why throughout my life I was uncomfortable with it throughout. Like, I tried to do it. I did. And I had some success with certain techniques and certain practices with certain groups of people and what have you, and had some wonderful experiences. But I'm gonna start out by saying this. There is, in the beginning, people thought trees and stones and rocks were inanimate objects. And we have since come to understand that trees are living beings, and the ability to measure the communication between tree to tree or person to tree is now possible. The same goes with rocks. So what we once thought were inanimate objects are not. And the same goes now with what's happening within our bodies. A lot of people thought we're just electromagnetic, but that now has proven not to be the case. And they're those of us who've always known we're beings of light. And what has been proven now is that there's a lining in our cell walls, which is crystalline. And there's also within our neurons, there's these microtubular parts to our neurons, which once was thought to be just scaffolding, I suppose, is now realized that it is made up of a crystalline matrix, which they now know is a communicator of light consciousness or conscious light. So we are in effect beings of light, and which is something that you, Carrie, and I have been discussing and sharing with the wider community for some time. And what I want to say is that when we discuss the moon matrix, we're talking about a matrix which is more designed and targeting our electromagnetic chambers and our electromagnetic fields and the way our the information and data is communicated throughout our bodies using electrical signals. Now, light has been around for a long time. I mean, this is the construct of the universe, and the great arena is huge. It's vast with multiple universes in it. So there's beings that exist who have really, really mastered light. And if we are at the core light beings, then they're going to come up with programs to manipulate us on the level of light. In other words, there is a light matrix that has been created, and we have been systematically assimilated into that light matrix. And there are cosmic software programs, light programs, that have been imposed upon our humanity in order to achieve that assimilation into the light domains that these entities have created, and the realms and the domains that they wish to assimilate us into. Now, relative to what we've been experiencing here on the Earth plane in our current level of awareness, those sorts of experiences can be incredibly euphoric relative to what we have here. And that was part of the greater plan on their behalf, was to plunge us into negativity for a very, very long time. And then right at the end of the cycle, as we want to birth into this new state of being, which is really our intended outcome for coming here, they have tried to peel us off to lure us into their light domains by imposing these light programs onto us. And there's many, many people that have been, and as I was too, myself included, was being lured into those paradigms. And I feel that I've really broken through that cosmic matrix, and I'm presenting it in a way that people can understand. Now, like I said, no one has to accept this, but it is a reality for me. It is a reality for many, many people I know. The feedback we're getting is incredible. And I feel that the book goes a long way in really helping the people understand the bigger picture.
Okay. Well, let me say that, it sounds very sort of innocuous what you're saying. And I think that the trouble is, to some degree, determining what's a light, what's a light program and what's an actual, real light, so to speak. And the crystalline beings that we are and are becoming, and those of us that are activating various strands of DNA and moving forward, so to speak. And I think that the trouble is that, at least in the book, what I could see is that you were targeting the chakra system. And the chakras are, are light. And so there you're actually making a distinction between one form of light and another. And I actually think it's a mistake. But I'm not sure kind of why you're making that mistake. But I appreciate that you, you know, that you believe what you're saying and where, and you want to, you know, kind of carry it through. The trouble is, you know, I'm not actually seeing any substantiation that even makes sense. So if you could talk a little bit about why you targeted the chakra system, what sort of made you do that and where you're going with that? Because if you'd like to avoid, see, what happens is I know some people out there won't even be aware of the chakra system. So, but if you're aware of the chakras and you're aware of linking up the chakras and what is called, as a result, Kundalini energy, and which is a form of orgone, which is the same word. It actually means the same thing as Kundalini, and is a form of really plasma. And that's basically the universe of which we are a part, that activating that and joining it actually brings a person into a samadhi experience, which also can lead to what is called enlightenment and eventually, ascension out of the earth matrix and this matrix that we're part of in this 3D level, which is actually more 4D at this point. So that's kind of the basic premise, and what you are actually doing in sort of trying to, I guess, deny or negate the chakra system is put something one would assume in its place. And I guess so the question becomes, what are you putting in its place? And then the question would be whether you're really indeed, you know, conceptualizing something correctly, or whether it's just a matter of what you've gotten yourself caught up in. It is more of a question of semantics and even possibly some overlay that might come from prior lives and some interesting things, because there are some fascinating discussions that can go on in regard to the symbolism of the snake and the Kundalini energy and the whole, you know, Draco constellation, et cetera, et cetera. And I know that you also, sorry, this is a long question, but I'm throwing in bits and pieces from your book for those who haven't read it also, which is, I've also noticed that you're linking the chakra system to Saturn. And only to Saturn and, you know, corresponding that. And I think that that's a huge mistake, but, you obviously have reason to do that. So maybe you could address some of those points that I brought up, with the information from your book and how you see it. And then we could progress along those lines.
Yeah, sure. With, regards, I suppose, to the chakra system linking it to Saturn, originally we had 12 strands of DNA, and each one of our DNA we linked to each one of the planets in the solar system, because it's about it's working through an archetypal energy. And as we worked through each archetypal energy and we compressed ourselves down to two DNA, we lost contact with the level of life on each of those planets. And that's why now we're down to just two DNA. And we have the Earth and
actually the basic human is three DNA strands.
Yeah, I have a different take on that. My understanding is that we start out as 12 DNA, and we have been compressing ourselves cycle after cycle after cycle because we've been on this path to compression. The notion that we have been dumbed down from 12 strand to 2 strand, I don't agree with that. There's been manipulation within the most recent cycles after we compressed ourselves, because we wanted to bring everything back into zero point and back into balance. So in the section in the book that's called Road to Compression, it goes into detail and explains that whole idea, the concept from the very beginning, even before this galaxy was created. And the reason I linked the chakras to Saturn, it's because I've had a personal experience of my chakras when I had them, which I know some people find that a little bit difficult to deal with, I think that I don't have them anymore. When I became consciously aware of the connection to Saturn, and I had a deep connection with the consciousness of Saturn itself, the planet itself, I came to realize, just how controlling that that energy is, and our 12th chakra system is actually connected to the synthetic universe of the God entity that is in control of this whole program. And the chakra system is linked to the Kundalini, because the chakras is just one component of the three main components to this cosmic software program. And there's the chakra, which is the overlay. Then you've got the internal software program, which is the Kundalini. And I explain how that was created, why it was created, and who created it. And then I also explain the third component, which is the pineal gland. And if you look at, of course, you have the big pine cone outside the Vatican. And if you look at the Eastern religions, the Western religions, you look at all the religions around the world, they're all linked to the pineal gland. They all use the pineal symbolism. And the Kundalini in Christianity is known as the Holy Ghost. And so you've got this one God entity who's claiming to be the creator and ruler of all things on all levels of all that is and all that exists. And that's not reality, because we are infinite. So there's not one anything. There's no totality of anything. So this entity who's claiming to be God has created an incredible software program on a cosmic level. And the program of the chakras, the Kundalini and the pineal calibrate people and assimilate them into the universal paradigms that this being has created.
Okay. Well, saying that people are infinite and therefore there are not one is actually a contradiction in terms.
Well, it's not really. No, it's not.
It is actually.
To live in harmony together is...
Yeah, because here we're getting into extremely philosophical, esoteric matters, but when one says one is infinite, to say one is one or many would be the same thing, because infinite is infinite. So there is no contradiction between one and many. It would be all one in essence. We can probably agree to disagree there. I think that at this point, discussion, in other words, you're not going to come to a conclusion because you are simply talking about intellectual concepts that people can either agree with or disagree with based on their own experience. But I just have to say that the terminology is contradictory. To say one is infinite and is only many, not one, is a contradiction.
Well, it's not, because if you're infinite, then there's no one anything. To be infinite, it's open-ended. There's no totality. Because the concept of one is a finite. When you ever use oneness, you're using a finite concept.
Well, actually, no, that's only the male definition of oneness. The true definition of oneness involves everything. Therefore, there is no limit. Therefore, it's unlimited. Therefore, it's infinite. Therefore, it's all one. At any rate, let's move on past that. Sure. So at this point, you believe you have no chakras, and you believe that what you've actually done is kind of narrowed the playing field into only this matrix, and then taking the symbolism and making that something of the enemy, and then trying to explain how you feel that you've gone beyond that. But actually, if you understood what true Kundalini is and joining the chakras, is eventually does bring you beyond the individual chakras, because you can become one by joining all of them. And therefore you, in an essence, in a certain sense, could be said to have superseded the chakras, but you do so through linking them and not through avoiding them. And I think that there's at a certain point you may intellectually want to reject these sort of, physiological and esoteric concepts, but in the end, you because we use language to communicate, there's no way that you can actually avoid going through something that is physiologically and I guess you might say esoterically part of what it means to be human. In other words, you're not going to change the nature of who you are just because you wish to call it by different names.
Well, in my experience and and in my wife's experience and in many people's experience that we've been in contact with, we've managed to go beyond the chakra body and the chakra system. And what we are in communication with is our heart center, not the heart chakra of the chakra system. But when you go beneath that, you go deeper into oneself, you merge into your heart, which is your organic essence and your connection to the greater universe. And that's when you have this incredible innate and deep understanding of what the chakra system is, what the kundalini is, and how they are functioning and on what levels they're functioning on.
Okay. Well, I would say that that's simply jargon. And, you know, in the end, what you're really talking about is...
Are you still there, Carrie?
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was muted. So I think that, well, at this point, we probably have to move on from here because I think what we're talking about is it becomes a sort of a war of words, but it doesn't really go anywhere because trying to say that you and other people that you've talked to know what you're talking about because they go beyond the chakra system, to say you go beyond the chakra system when indeed the only way you do that is by linking them up and becoming one is, you know, in other words, you can't do it. It's kind of like saying, well, you go beyond something because you say you do. Well, sure, we can take your word for it. I can tell you that I go beyond it easily, but I don't use the same words you use to go to beyond it. Then it becomes kind of like a war of words between Christianity and Muslims or something. It's like madness. What I'd like to do at this point is kind of take this discussion to another, in another direction and ask you where you have gone with once you're going into all of this, where are you? Because at one point you were very concerned with kind of leaving this dimension and leaving the earth. And if I remember correctly, you believed, at least back when I first interviewed you, that you were going to be leaving around the 21st of December 2012. Was that correct? And has that changed?
No, I was never going to leave the earth. I didn't just want to leave the earth. I was going to see the process through with Mother Earth. The concept of leaving was merging into a high dimensional plane with Mother Earth. That's probably where that idea is coming from. But I'm here with my Mother Earth.
Hi there. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we are talking to George Kavassalis about his newest book and where he's going with his sort of philosophy at this time. George, why don't you talk a little bit more about where you go with the book, and then I think that will be helpful for people that are listening to get some more of your ideas.
Yeah, sure. I just want to start by reading out the first couple of sentences in it, and it goes, "Hi, my name is George and I've written a book. I reckon this will not be your average read. So grab yourself a cuppa and enjoy an awareness-expanding experience. Having said that, because of the challenging nature of the content, instead of a cuppa, some people might actually need a stiff drink." So I thought I'd share that because it is challenging people, and it's great. It's great to see. It's nice to have a healthy debate about life. And where the book goes is it basically helps people to understand the structure of the universe. So I'll begin with explaining how the universe is structured and how the universe, where we came from to come into this universe and that we decided to enter it and for what reasons. And then we worked our way down through all the levels of the universe. And then once we did that, we got to a point where we'd basically seen everything and done everything and been everything, and we needed to then reintegrate all of that wisdom and all that knowledge, because it wasn't just a single aspect that journeyed through the universe. We fragmented ourselves throughout the universe, and we have a myriad of aspects of ourselves in many domains and realities, and we've created ourselves as galaxies, and we're stars, and we're planets, and it's incredible who and what we've been and what we've done and how we've co-created along the way. We're really incredible beings, and it seems to be all forgotten, and I'm just trying to help people remember. And then we found ourselves coming into this galactic womb because it's a fractal of the universe. And the way it was created is by taking an entire galactic system and compressing it into a star system. And that's how the idea of fractalization began, and inserted it into this single galactic system, which is known as the galactic womb. And so all the star systems that we have in our galaxy are actually fractals of galaxies. And and we've been on this road to compression, and then we came into this solar system, which is a fractal yet again, and then onto the planet, and then into our bodies. So we're actually fractals of the universe, bringing it all back into balance and reintegrating everything. So I'm helping people to remember their journey to, and that's why it's called Our Universal Journey. And also to remember how magnificent and how powerful we are. Because this is about the journey into the heart. We go, you know, this is about getting beyond all our programs and all our belief systems, and getting beyond all of that that we've accumulated along the way in our universal journey, and bringing everything back just to our core authentic self. And it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. Just back to this beautiful balanced state of being fully integrated and taking responsibility for everything that we've done and everything that we've been, and all our co-creations, and attaining that wisdom and birthing into this new way of life with our Earth Mother, which is the intended outcome of entering this universe to begin with.
Okay, let me ask you, because one thing that we actually do have a similarity in terms of what we talk about is what I call a robotic Superman, which is the path chosen by the Illuminati and the secret space program. And that all goes into the AI that is basically trying to run Earth at this time, as you may know. And I noticed that you do reference that in your book. Do you want to talk about it from your point of view? Because I call it a choice that people have to make, which is to go the way of the robotic Superman, which in your terminology would be the transhuman direction that involves AI and augmenting the physical body of humans, or the opposite direction, which I call the angelic human, which is going back to our source and basically the infinite self that we are, eternal beings. So why don't you talk about, from your perspective, a little bit about that, the AI, in other words, and that choice?
Okay, you want me just to talk about the AI side of it, or the other side as well?
Well, I mean, both. You know, in other words, the choice that people have between the AI that is now sort of pervading our reality here on Earth, and so on, and then of course the choice to go in another direction.
Yeah, because I talk about a third choice, which is the middle path, which is the one that I'm choosing to be on. So there's the part of the AI, which is the path of technology, and back into, like you said, transhumanism. Now, this AI that we have locally is an aspect of a much greater AI, which is a cosmic entity. It's huge, huge artificial intelligence. Very ancient, and it's teamed up with a god entity. It's basically this god entity's greatest ally, and it has contracted this being to come here and do its best to try and assimilate us into its domain, into the AI's domain. And it's projected an aspect of itself into a biocomputer on the moon. And I really explain in detail how the moon matrix, what the basic structure of it is to do with, like, a silica electrical based structure, which simulates our silica electrical infrastructure, because we have a exocellular matrix, and it's primarily the foundation to it is silica, which creates collagen, and these two compounds are what bond our body together. It's what creates our exocellular matrix. And because the nerve signals on one level are electrical. What they have done is they've smothered the moon with silicon and then they placed it in orbit around the Earth, and they're using, they're getting us to use like an electro, silicon based technology, which is electrical and linear based technologies. And in that regards, on that level, they're using that to create the earthly matrix. So it's an incredible, I would say very clever technique that they've used to force us to use this type of technology, which then helps them to interface with us really deeply, through the similar energetic patterns and the, I would say the, simulation of our own exocellular matrix. And I find that really fascinating, because when you watch television, the reason why it's so effective is because it uses that similar energetic patterns and energetic techniques to actually connect with us. You know, we could have been using light-based technologies, but we've been forced to use this particular type of technology, and for a very good reason. And then there's the other side of it, which you talked about, the angelic side of things, which I refer to as the positive white love and light domains. And see, that's the alter ego of this first group that we spoke of. And what I'm trying to explain here is that there is actually a third choice, which I talk about in the book in a section called, Crossroads. And both of those paths, whether you choose that angelic human path or you choose that AI path or the path of technology, both will recycle you back into the cosmic arena, back into the great arena, sorry. And there's actually a middle path where if you just strip everything away and go back to your authentic self from your heart and the core of your essence, then that is the middle path that I want to be on, and that's the path that I know I need to be on to stay with my Earth Mother and see the process through.
Okay. Well, I would actually say that, you know, the angelic human is it's not like the choice. You already are an angelic human, but the question is whether or not you want to incorporate the what is basically the robotic side of humanity into your humanness and go that path. So that's why, in essence, there's sort of two paths as opposed to three. And what you seem to be saying is that you're more or less talking. We're kind of having some difficulty here with semantics, but in essence, what you're talking about is remaining with, the angelic human. In other words, if you call your authentic self your angelic human, which is in my world or language would be the same thing, then in essence, you're talking about two paths. In other words, it has to do with whether or not you wish to go the way of what the secret space program and the AI, as you described it, has chosen or would like us to choose for us. So in a certain sense, we are basically agreeing. Now, what I'd like to do here is also talk about whether or not you have had any, I know you said you went to Saturn and you were very much sort of exposed to the controlling influence there. And I don't know if you know about my interview with Norm Bergram, who talks about the ships in the rings of Saturn. But considering your background with Saturn, you might find that of great interest. I think I sent it to you.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it all, Kerry. I've watched about, I would say, 20 minutes of it, and I'm definitely going to sit down and watch the rest of it.
Yeah, but at any rate, it's just that he, as a scientist and as somebody who did work in the secret space program, was looking at those. But he became something of an outcast because he wrote his book, Ringmakers of Saturn. And it is true that he is saying that those beings who have been creating those craft in the rings are headed here. And I thought you might find that of special interest. And, you know, do you want to address that at all?
I would love to address that. First of all, who's Saturn? Who is the consciousness of the planet Saturn? That's the question to ask, because once you understand that level of modus operandi, you understand the intentions of the planet being in our solar system and all the beings that are working with that energy, that expression of who and what that being is. And it is the an aspect of Jehovah. It's a planetary expression of a God entity that you know as Jehovah or Yahweh or Allah or whatever you want to call it. That is the God entity that's behind all the religions. Now, the reason those rings are there is because the foundational energetic pattern of the solar system is the sun. I mean, we're immersed in the solar system, and we have an incredible agreement on a very high soul level with the being that is the solar system to enter this its embodiment and to have an incarnational experience here. So through the drama of our experiences here, this I will say a duplicitous force has been allowed to come here and manifest itself as a planetary body to facilitate these incredible challenges that we're working through. And through its rings, because it wanted to gain control of the solar system, it used harmonics through the rings, and it's locked the rings in with our chakras, because it's through the harmonics that it's able to influence people in the way that it wants to. And so the seven chakras, main chakras we have down here, are harmonically linked to the seven rings of Saturn. And that's why, and it wanted to gain.
Actually, you know, in the symbolism, I there is a problem here, because the information is that Saturn equals actually Satan, and that it is in essence part of the Luciferian matrix, and it has to do with death and limitation, and death is an illusion. So, and these are the kinds of things that Saturn governs. Saturn also governs time, for example. So it's all about limitation. And whether or not other similar names for Saturn would be, as you said, Yahweh or Jehovah is another matter. I'm not really sure that that those are synonymous with the name Satan. But I do know that the word Saturn is derived and has a very strong relationship to the name Satan. So there, you know, I think that perhaps you have maybe not taken that into account.
I have. Yeah, absolutely I have. And I mean, there's still the religions that worship on Saturn's day. Like the Seventh-day Adventists, for example, still worship on Saturn's day. Many do. The Saturnian cults have been around for a long time. And, you know, the word Satan is just means adversary and opposer. So
but in other words, you have to bring into effect the opposite. In other words, I think you're crossing certain terminologies and confusing them and putting them all in one bucket. And I don't think they belong in one bucket. But be that as it may, what I'd like to do at this point is bring on some questions from the audience and let them ask you some questions. It is going to be fascinating if indeed Norm Bergeron is correct in these particular beings are on the way here, and whether or not, you know, in other words, there is information that I have that Saturn itself, the planet, is actually a portal into another dimension that is not this universe. In other words, out of this universe. That there is, a limitation and a controlling. It's a controlling or gatekeeping body. So there is, at least it, from what I can tell, the one thing that we would agree on is it doesn't bode well to be having those beings headed towards Earth at this time.
No, it does not.
If you watch my interview with Norm, you'll see that he doesn't look too happy about it either. So it is quite an interesting dynamic going on.
Yeah, it is.
And so, you know, there's sort of a synchronicity there, I think. At least in terms of that and what you're and the book you've written. Is there anything else before we start taking questions that you want to sort of point up to that you talk about in your book that I haven't brought up or touched on here or asked you, you know, or that you haven't discussed?
Oh, there's quite a bit. There is a lot of detail in the book. for example, Who Made Religion, Exposing Religion. I go into all that sort of stuff, the hidden symbolism of the sword. I mean, my goodness, where do we begin? I feel that it's really important to take into consideration the emphasis I have on self-empowerment towards the end of the book, because, you know, I drag people through the trenches of the supreme cosmic deception, which is the name of the chapter, and, helping people to get through all their belief systems and their understandings of life on a cosmic level, so they can get through to break through that paradigm and get through to just the natural organic way of life, which is so simple, and there's no need for, you know, all these other types of cosmic software programs and what have you. So it's really, really important to understand how powerful a person is, and that we have co-created along the way, and we're incredibly powerful. And even though there's, you know, at the moment people have, like you said, semantics and different ideas about things, and maybe we're talking about the same things, but we're just using different words, you know, that's more than likely the case. And I would say we'll confront anyone's belief systems. I truly, believe and feel that that's going to be the case. So I would say to people, be patient and really try to read through it, make it through to the end, because the stuff at the end is really inspiring, and the simplicity of just going into your heart, it's the magic key.
Okay, that's great. And I would say that, you know, like I said, anything that you want to talk about beyond this, while we're taking calls or in between the calls, feel free to sort of broach into those various topics. Now, we do have the ability to take phone calls, as well as I get Skype questions that they're posting in here. They've been posting it during the show, and we've apparently lots of people have called in and had to hang up. So, you know, simply because we were talking. So what I want to do is try to take some of the calls. And, so I need the producer on the line to bring on a caller. If you do have a caller, let us know. And otherwise I will go down the list of questions that I've gotten so far. So hopefully that'll all kind of work. There is a call in number 347-688-2902. Or the Skype name Freedom Screen, where I guess you can post a question. So this is just something that's just come through for people to be aware of. Somebody is saying, what do you feel in your heart? Are you there, George?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Someone called in or hung up or something. Let's see. What do you feel in your heart is the most important topic to be sharing at this present moment?
I would have to say that what I mentioned just a moment ago, that who we are at the core is so simple, so graceful, so deep, and yet so powerful. And when you can get to that place and move beyond all programs, all belief systems, strip everything away, we're kind of, because we've been immersed in them for so long, we're kind of left naked, and it's really disconcerting in the beginning to let go of all these belief systems. And when you're standing there just stripped naked of everything, you're left with nothing but yourself. And I would say to people, trust in that moment. Don't fall back into those belief systems. Go through with it and go back, fall back into yourself, into your true, authentic self. And you will experience a wonder, a peace, an empowerment like never before. And go beyond everything, everything. Don't externalize anymore. Just bring your inner light out. It's time to turn inside out. And when you bare your soul, people are going to want to trample all over it. And they're going to do that. It's, they can't help it. And that's okay. That's okay if they can feel the need to do that. And, you know, in the last 9 months, I've really, you know, had a bit of a difficult time in that area of life. And I found, you know, I'm going to continue to bear my soul. I'm going to continue to be my authentic self. And I know you've had these issues too in your journey too, Kerry, that where we're totally honest, totally genuine and totally authentic, it really, really is challenging for those around us. And the more you change, the more you're going to realize that your life around you is going to change. So embrace change, because if you don't, you'll become stagnant and the process of going within will then just come to a grinding halt. You've got to embrace change and you've got to trust and believe in who and what you are. It's an incredibly empowering experience.
Okay, thank you for that. We have a caller named Mike. Mike, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Okay, go right ahead.
So, George, I'm wondering, you previously said you were going to ascend on March of this year, and it didn't happen. Now you moved it to next year. If it doesn't happen next year, you're going to move it to 2014? I mean, I'm asking because, you know, you got so many people like that guy Drake. You know, every time a deadline or he says something's going to happen, he always moves it to the next week or the next month. And this seems to be very common.
Yeah, I didn't actually say I was going to ascend. If you look back through all my material, I never said I was going to ascend on March this year. I said that things would start to happen, the changes. I said in interviews, whether they're going to be personal, whether they're going to be in the public arena, I'm not really sure. For me, I said that Doorways, the one prediction that I did make was that Doorways would probably start opening around the end of last year, like as in openings in this reality. And, you know, I pull myself up on that, like, you know, I take responsibility for what I said, and I did say those things. And what I've discovered is that it's an internal doorway at the moment that I've been experiencing, and that many around me and many emails we're getting from people from all over the world, that's what they're experiencing. And so the actual change of your external life around you is maybe more of a gradual change than a direct walking through an opening change. So for me, the cycle still ends on the 21st of March, 2013. I've always said that. And I continue to say that, and I feel that in my heart. So what's going to happen around that time, the detail of it, I'm just going to back off from making predictions. I'm no longer going to do that. I've been there. I've done that. And, but what I will say is I feel the changes are going to happen sooner rather than later. I don't think it's a 20-year thing or whatever. I'm here to do it in this lifetime, and I feel it's coming soon in my life. And so I would say hang on for the ride, because one day when that first domino falls in the public arena, then you better hang on for the ride, because it's going to be huge. And we're still all waiting for that to happen, and it's not far away. We are on the precipice. And all the information I'm sharing now at the moment is about preparing people, empowering them from within, so they can look beyond all the programs that are being imposed onto humanity now and all the ones that are about to be imposed onto humanity.
What exactly is ascension in your interpretation?
Yeah, sure. Ascension just means to ascend, to raise up to a higher level. So really what it means is we're talking about raising the frequency, raising one's frequency, and also symbiotically it's raising the frequency of the planet. So it's a symbiotic relation, which is what I've talked about all along. We're having a symbiotic journey and relationship with our Earth Mother, and together we are ascending into a higher state of being. So we're awakening into being free and sovereign is probably the better way that I like to put it these days, because the ascension word in the New Age movement is just, you know, it's tainted. And so that's what it really means, is to raise one's frequency into a higher state of being.
Okay, Mike, we have lots of other people that want to ask questions, but I really appreciate your questions, and I'm sure George does, so thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, good questions, Mike. Thanks, mate.
So at this point, we've got some questions in the chat, so I'm going to see if I can grab a few of them. George, have you heard of a man named Toltec? Somebody's asking. He claims to channel beings from Andromeda. Tells his listeners that by January 2014, we'll have moved into the fourth dimension. Do you want to answer that, George?
Yeah, some people have mentioned that name to me a few times. I honestly don't know. I haven't listened to any material from Toltec. So We're already accessing the fourth. I'm already accessing a new. Many people already accessing the fifth dimensional energies. We do it from time to time. We seem to be doing it more and more. And that's the way it's going. We're accessing those higher states of being from within ourselves more and more all the time. So it's kind of like what we're doing is going through the process of anchoring those higher energies here, because we are star seeds. So, you know, I said that we're galaxies and we're stars and we're planets. And so because this planet is becoming a body of light, or in conventional terms, a star, we are.
Okay. This is Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot Whistleblower Radio, and we're talking to George Vasilis, and we are currently taking questions. There's about 30 minutes left in the show here, so if you do have questions, please feel free to either call in or post them in the chat, and I will try to get to them for you. Meanwhile, George, is there anything that you want to add here before I go into the next caller or question?
No, I think I'm fine. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good for now.
Okay. So at this moment, we've got somebody asking, will doorways to Avalon open only to humanity, or will they also be available to other life forms, animal, plants, etc.?
Yeah, well, the transformation of the Earth is also happening with the natural environment. So it's not just us sorting out who's going to go through and who's not. Who's going to transform with Mother Earth and who's not. It's also happening with a natural environment. And, you know, there's some nice dogs out there, and there's some real evil dogs. There's some nice cats, and there's some real stuck up arrogant cats and evil cats. And, you know, things like that happen. And, it's not just in our human domain. When you connect with drama going on in the natural environment as well. So, understand that it's happening on every level, not just in our domain, not just the human domain. It's every level, because the transformation of our planet into this higher state of being, it's basically all the dimensions are imploding into one. We're not just going back to the fifth dimension. You know, that's like a real temporary measure, and we're accessing, you know, those energies at the moment. But the reality is all the dimensions are imploding, and what's going to be created here is an expression of life that represents all dimensions in one place.
Okay. Let's see. There's a question. Are there changes that are happening to do with our sun entering spring equinox, is a person's asking.
Can you just ask that again with the spring equinox? Sorry.
Somebody is asking, are the changes that are happening to do with our sun entering its spring equinox?
Well, that's one step of the changes. Every equinox, every solstice is quite a significant step. Also, the Venus transit was huge for me. I remember what I put in place back a while back in June of 2004, and it reached its gestation period at this final Venus transit now, and major changes. So, yeah, the sun on the equinox, and when the sun, I think it's in relation to the one in March in 2013. So when it enters the equinox there, what's happening is the planet is completing a cycle, a life cycle, which was set up 24,832 years ago as the foundational timeline. And then we have the, you can call it the illusionary timeline, which has an acceleration on it, which is the one we're experiencing with this level of awareness, it ends up being 26,366.618 years, because it's the foundational timeline with an acceleration factor of 1/5. Now, for if people want to look into that, it's really quite fascinating, and that's why when people were measuring the precessional cycle in at the beginning of the last century, they got 25,800 years, and then later on they measured it and it came out to 25,920 years, and so you could see there's been an acceleration. And if you measure it now, you'll find that it's over 26,000 years, and it's a bit of a logarithmic acceleration. It's really incredible. So, yeah, that's the point of balance. That's when everything comes back into balance. The cycle's completed. The cycle finishes on an equinox, not a solstice. And because it's the precession of the equinoxes, not precession of the solstices. And that's when balance is attained. And that's when there's going to be a trigger of really, really dramatic changes, take place in the way of this incredible, light that's going to come from deep within everyone and everything. And there's going to be a lot of people that just won't be able to take that vibration, and they're going to have to find a way off the planet real fast if they're, you know, in a very short period of time, because things are going to change here quite dramatically.
We've been joined by ETE.
Yeah.
Okay. That I assume that's a human ET. But anyway, do you have a question? Hello?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. My question is, George, by the way, thanks for everything that you've done. You're amazing. Do you agree that maintaining a plant-based, high-vibrational vegan diet makes ascension a whole lot easier?
I'll say it's got to be an individual thing, because being purely vegan or vegetarian is certainly good for some people, and unfortunately it's been turned into a bit of an ideology for others, like a religious thing. Don't take that as an insult. That is just reality. Because I've got friends who are vegans and vegetarians, and they have no qualms with me doing my thing. I still eat meat, because I need it. I need that vibration because of my energetic makeup. And if I don't eat meat, I go out of sync, and I feel awful and I get ill. And so for me, for my journey, in order to attain balance, I still need the vibration of meat. And my relationship with the natural environment, if I'm going to have just a vegetarian meal, which I do on a regular basis, I still honor and acknowledge the sacrifice that the spirits of the beings of those plants have made, so that I can consume their bodies and eat and continue to live abundantly in this reality. Plants have feelings. Plants have emotions, just like animals do. It's just on a different level. And for many people, they're not communicating with plants on that level. So it's still an expression of life. They're still in the same dimensional plane that we are. And I think the main point of difference is to actually eat organic and biodynamic. That'll make a huge difference to someone's energetic field. And if we can get away from a judgmental ideology that plants don't have feelings and they're not living conscious beings, because they certainly are. So whether you eat an animal or whether you eat a plant, you're still eating a living, conscious, thinking, feeling being. So I would say to people, let's just take a step back from certain ideologies and do what's right for you, because I've got vegan and vegetarian friends that if they try to eat meat, that's just going to make them sick. It's no good for them. And so we all are on our own journey. And as we come reattain balance right at the very end of our journeys, what I need for balance, because I've had a very long universal journey, and what you need, because you've taken different paths in your universal journey, as we come together into our meeting point, of zero point, the last little bit of balancing required is going to be, for me, is going to be different to you. So that's the way I look at it.
Great. Thank you. Lots of love.
Yeah. Yeah. You too.
Okay. Thank you very much, caller. So we have some more callers, but we also have some more questions here in the chat that are kind of rolling by very, very quickly. Someone wants to ask you how you get tricked into reincarnation recycling when you cross over.
Yeah, it depends where you go, because when someone passes over, this is like Grand Central Station, this planet, people go to many different destinations. It's not just one destination. So it'll depend where you go, and it depends on your greater soul journey through this universe, whether you need to come back here or not. So if you want to look at it from the point of your cosmic ego, then, you can be trapped into these, light domains of a religious god entity or what have you, and that will want to recycle you back in, because it wants to feed off your energy, because the energy that they feed off us here is more intense than anywhere in the universe, because we're fractals of the universe and therefore accessing more energy than anywhere else. So they're getting an incredible feed. So, and that's one of the reasons why there's been a huge population explosion too on our planet of late, because of the amount of people being forced to come here from within the recycling of those dramas within the great arena. So It's a symbiotic thing. There's people that need to be here. We're here rebalancing, and other people I've spoken to, they were ordered to come here. And I said to them, actually, you weren't. You chose to come here from a high level, but they didn't want to hear that. They just wanted to continue to play the victim with, no, I was forced to come here. So I said, okay, that's fine. And they just, some people would just do that. But the way this planet is going and what she's becoming, there's not going to be a continuation of forced recycled, reincarnated lives here, because this planet is changing. And, the epoch of amnesia and, the cycles of suppression and control in this reality on this planetary woman, she's, no longer going to facilitate that. It's over. So, if people are going to continue those paths and exploring those avenues and those types of experiences, they're going to be doing it somewhere else, but they're not going to be doing it on this planet.
Okay. Let's see. We've got someone asking the relationship between Venus in the equation, because Venus has been regarded as the feminine essence for eons of time. That is the question being asked in the chat.
Well, it's an aspect of feminine. It's an archetype, definitely. She's a feminine. She's a lady. She's got more of a youthful. She's more the young, flamboyant, vibrant sort of young girl, with a touch of warrior to her. So yeah, she's definitely a female. There's the other side to her, of course, another role that she's playing, and that's the seductress and the woman of desire and what have you. So she's playing a dualistic role, as every planet is in our solar system. So she's very important in the scheme of things. I got a lot out of that last Venus transit. It was very, very big for me. So I hope people can understand the importance of Venus and her beautiful pentaflower around the sun.
Okay, let's see. Somebody is asking, I'm just trying to grab just, these questions as they go. Do we have a caller, by the way?
Yes, we do. Sure. 705.
Can I just interject here? I just need to follow up with that Venus question. The Venus is not the divine feminine, neither is the moon. The real divine feminine is this planet and this galaxy. When you connect with your heart and remember your relationship you're having with this planet, you will remember who she is. You're going to remember who the sun is inside of and upon of. And that's the important thing to do. Let go of belief systems and re-experience it for yourself from within your own heart. And remember who this woman is you're upon, because her sacrifice is so much greater than what we've been led to believe.
Okay, so 705 is with us on the line here. Go right ahead.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, George. Can you hear me fine?
Yes.
Yeah, we can.
George, I have just a question. I was thinking, because I tuned in about 11 o'clock. You guys were talking about Saturn. I read a book. It was kind of more of a disturbing book. But what do you know about the Black Sun? And I guess that kind of goes with the Indo-Europeans and in India. Well, they talk a lot about reincarnation as well.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't?
No, you go. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I guess I was seeing if you would touch on that, but I guess the main question was about the kind of the archetypes and previous religious or pagan people that have left markers. Let's say the Wotan, I guess, hung from the tree of life. Is this kind of like the same timeline, and are they trying to tell us what the future is like?
Yeah, I feel it is a very similar timeline of so many cultures. I can't believe how many cultures have actually said around this time that this major change is going to happen. It is happening. I mean, there's people that I see asking the question, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? I think they're just totally missing it already. I mean, the amount of changes that I've gone through and the way my life has changed and the changes that I see around me on the planet, the moon being so much brighter than what it was at night. I mean, when I was a child, a full moon was pretty much equal to less than half a full moon now in the way it lights up the outdoors. We can walk around here. You could ride a motorbike out here. Nope. You can drive a car on a full moon without your lights on. We see everything here. It's so bright. I don't know if it's the same in the Northern Hemisphere, but it's unbelievable the changes that are taking place. We've got the sun setting in different locations at the solstices and the equinoxes here, which is happening all around the planet. People are taking notice of that. So there's major, major changes happening all around us. And the black sun, I have talked about that briefly. I don't know that much about it, except that it's like a brother to the sun we have now, and it's a failed star. And other people's interpretations of the black sun is more of a black hole. And for me, it's more of a jealous brother to the sun that we have now, and who never quite made it, and it's a failed star, and has just been jealous of his brother, who did turn into a star and is now, because of who, of what our sun is facilitating, is jealous of. Because you've got to understand, stars have personalities. They're people. They're just expressing themselves on those levels, in those embodiments. We're all stars, and each star has its own unique expression and vibrational pattern, and it provides its own set of experiences within that domain, just the same as planets.
Maybe that's why they're all watching us, kind of like the Earth is the... I thought this when I was very, very young. It was kind of like Total Recall in 88 to 92. I was only between 1 and 5, and I thought God watched us on a TV. I kind of just watched our lives, and he had all the time in the world. I don't know where I came up with that, but
yeah, that's really really in-depth insight, because that is how it is for some of these. I would say the God entity that I refer to in the book is not just an individual embodiment like that. It's an energy, you know, in the great arena of the universe. It's a massive, massive, powerful consciousness. So I'm not referring to that sort of God, but there is extraterrestrial beings that have come here and have also imposed their will on humanity and play God, and they do watch from a screen. So yeah, that is an accurate, on one level, that is an accurate insight that you had.
I was very young when I thought of it, and I called him to Kerry when I was talking to Laura Eisenhower. I also had a lot of theories about Mars when I was younger, and they didn't really come to that collection. So I actually looked at an interview with one of the crystal children, because I was approached as a crystal child, and he was talking about Mars, and there was just a lot of clicks there, and
okay. At this moment, caller, thank you very much for calling. We need to allow for some other questions, and we've got a very short amount of time left here, about 10 minutes or less. So thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Have a good night, guys.
You too.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So there are some other questions here. George, did you want to add anything before I go to the next question?
Yeah, this play that we're a part of goes to so many different levels, and when you look out into the cosmos and you see, or even just into our solar system, and you see all these other planets, and then you can see all the stars. You look at the night sky. You know, the old stories that the indigenous tribes used to say, that when someone passed away, that they went back there, or they would say, "See that star? That's your auntie," and things like that. There's a point of truth to that. And a level of truth to it. And not only that, excuse me, people have come because they're incarnated from, let's say, an extraterrestrial race from a star system. That's a level of truth as well. But also all these planets, all these stars, they're all people. They're all us. And who's who and what's what? Well, that'll be revealed when more of the curtain gets drawn back and the veil lifts, and we connect with much more of the greater knowledge. But try and look at it from the point of view as people, and there's an incredible play and an incredible cosmic drama that's taking place here. And that really helps to understand the dynamics of what's going on.
Okay, someone is asking, let's see, if we are to move into 5D, does that imply that 3D will cease to exist on this planet?
Yeah, that's what's happening. The lower dimensions are transmuting. All dimensions are transmuting, but in that process, we're bringing more of the higher dimensions. We're anchoring more of that here, simply because the journey of the cycles here have replicated our universal journey, because this is a fractal of the universe. So for the beings who are completing the universal journey at the stage, right at the very end, it's kind of like a... it's simulated you going through all the levels of the universe and down to the very bottom and going to the depths of the universe. So this cycle at the very end here has also in a way simulated that as well. So we needed to do that so we can compress everything down and relive everything in this very compressed state of being. So it's a very, very incredible process we're going through here. Very exciting. And so those dimensions are being transmuted as we bring more of the higher energies in. But it's going to get to the point where even the higher energies, they're all going to kind of like meet somewhat towards the middle. So, and then a new way of life is going to be created, which represents all of those dimensions simultaneously. It's going to, even though all dimensions can be accessed here, but to have them all in one realm together, it's hard for our linear minds to actually grasp that concept. But it really is going to be an incredible way of life. I'm very excited about what's coming.
Okay. Someone is asking if you have any data on the Sirian influence on Earth.
There's different levels to the Sirian influence, because the star Sirius herself is a higher aspect of our planetary consciousness. So she's a very, very graceful lady, and I have an aspect of me that's Sirian. I have an aspect of me that's Pleiadian. So I would say that, and of course in other places too, but I would say the Sirian influences here are, due to duality, are twofold. You've got very, very highly evolved advanced beings like the wisdom keepers of there's a lot of whale beings here that are wisdom keepers, which are helping with the library of the planet. And there's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a group too that's here to manipulate and control. So depending on which dimensional or vibratory realm you're talking about coming from Sirius, like Orion has the fatherly, it's the protector, the provider archetype. And so you've got these Orion Nordics that are coming here and working behind the scenes with our military, who innately within themselves have this archetypal urge to want to be our custodians. Now, they don't realize that they're controlling us. They want to actually control us. It's not sort of in their conscious awareness, but they have this want to be our custodians. And that's because of the foundational archetypal energies of their star system of Orion. So yeah, there's a lot of nurturing and caring beings that come from Sirius that are here. And really care for humanity, really love this planet, really care for this planet. I'm one of those beings, and a large part of my makeup here is from my aspect from Sirius, and I feel very, very connected to this planet. I have deep, deep love for her and our humanity.
Okay, let's see. We've got someone asking if you have any information on the Cygnet constellation.
I don't have any awareness of that at this stage. I know of it, but its role at this stage, I can't comment. I don't. Sorry. I would like to, but I don't.
Okay. How do you think practicing Tai Chi it looks like Tai Chi meditation in space affects our energy?
Yeah, it really helps with energy flow. It's really good. Those sort of exercises are wonderful. I don't do them myself. I have done them in previous lives. I've done them a little bit earlier on in this life. For me, I'm just trying to live from my heart, so I'm not actually doing any practices myself. So, yeah, they're really helpful for people. I find them a beautiful, peaceful sort of way of exercising and increasing energy flow.
Okay, they're telling me that we only have 3 minutes left. So maybe you would like to wrap up, George, with whatever sort of key sort of pieces of information you'd like to convey to people. And then also please do give your website again.
Okay, the key to understanding the cosmic matrix, the golden key to understanding it, is that the force that wants to limit and control you is a duplicitous force, not just a malefic force. Please understand this. Very, very important. It has mastered and has created paradigms of white, love and light. It has done both. And it wants to assimilate people into those paradigms, turn them into passive beings so it can continue to control and feed off them. That is the golden key to breaking free from the cosmic matrix, to get past the negative and the dark and get past the positive white, love and light as well, and go into a place of balance and take that third road if you're interested in doing that. If you want to explore those other two avenues further, by all means do that. You know, that's good for your soul. It's not good for me and it's not good for a lot of other people, but if that's the way you wish to go, then please, by all means, do that and really enjoy your journey and learn from it. We've taken that path. I've taken those journeys. I've been in those domains. I've done those practices, and it's I'm just done with that, and I want to leave the great arena. And to do that, you go into your heart, and the book really helps you to understand these concepts if anybody's interested in exploring it further. And you can go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au is the website for the book. It can also be reached through our main website, ourjourneyhome.com.au. And if you want a bit of fun and some in-depth discussions, have a listen to our little podcast of Super Woo Radio, which can be either through the website or the main website or its own website of superwooradio.com.au. And Kerry, I want to thank you.
Great.
I really want to thank you for this opportunity. Very much appreciate it.
No problem. I think that in the end, we're talking about a union of opposites, and it's all good.